Do we need tech to improve our lives, health and security? Proving you're on the button as ever, Susie, with respect to this particular survey that's come through, in which it seems that most Brits are actually looking for a pill to cure everything as opposed to fadgets and things.
Well, it's heartwarming, I think. I mean, I was excited when I read this research, because you just generally expect the latest connected device or more megapixels or whatever, because we're in this kind of it's almost slightly greedy, isn't it, where you upgrade your phone every year and what happens to the old phone, and the thought process isn't the same as when I was in the 70s, for example, and you recycled everything and added bits to it to remake it. So this is really great research, and I think perhaps sometimes the public, we are underestimated in the way that we think, and people are obviously thinking about medical solutions and using technology to innovate in those kind of fields, because that's going to affect them now and in the future. And it can be on sort of a day-to-day level with the kind of technology you use in the kitchen and it trying to eat healthily and that kind of thing, or on a broader scale, looking further ahead.
Well, it's interesting that the survey conducted, as we mentioned by Phillips, demonstrates that two-thirds of the nation hope that scientists will one day invent a pill that would cure all illness, rather than the invention of household robots. I always used to think that the household robot was surely, if you can go back in time to the 1950s, and people then still say we want that household robot. I just thought it was a butler.
Well, it's like the sort of time machine, isn't it, really? I mean, they're both in that kind of top five for innovative dreams of the future. However, you're right, with this pill that cures all illnesses, I mean, the likelihood of that happening is obviously extremely slim, but it's the thought process that's interesting, and that has come over the self-driving car, which, we are sort of seeing now. And as you say, robots doing the housework and time machines and things. And I think it just shows a swing of people thinking, we're absolutely kind of fed up. We need our connected devices, but can we have, better solutions to global problems and things that affect us and make us feel more happier and secure? And that's terrific. That's really great.
I wasn't quite sure about a fifth of the correspondents praying that there will one day be a cure for baldness. Have they not seen Jean-Luc Picard? That's the 24th century with Star Trek. For goodness sakes, important line from that point of view. If you happen to be follically challenged, don't worry. It's the bottom line, really. But still, maybe that's just a masculine perspective, Susie. I don't know. You mentioned, obviously, the time machine, one of the innovative dreams for the future, the robot to do the housework, wrinkle-free clothes. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, I always thought just marry somebody that's good at ironing.
Yeah.
That's my solution
This is one of the reasons why, for me, the absolute quote of this whole piece is actually sort of something you put on your Twitter feed just a few moments ago. Yesterday, you made a waterproof cat shelter from an old laundry basket, plastic sheeting, and an ex-yoga mat that you that's it. That's what you call the techno girl really getting down on the ground, really.
Yeah, thanks for
that. Critical stuff. Yeah.
Well, it was raining and their den had been destroyed, yeah. So I made them a new one. But yeah, that's growing up in the decade that I grew up in, I mean, anybody that was born after 1980 would think, I think, slightly differently to the way that I think, because they grew up in a digital generation with computers. I mean, when I was growing up, that wasn't the way that we lived at all. So life has changed hugely during my lifestyle, and I think, obviously some ways for the better and some ways not. But it seems now as though, people have kind of got over the having to have the latest new shiny thing and are thinking differently, which I like.
Isn't it a case as well that we need a balance in these kind of things? That, no matter what decade you actually come from, there's a human side of things, insofar as if you spend all your time in a kind of antiseptic digital world, it's as bad as actually being hyper organic, really.
Well, absolutely. And I think, we all love our connected devices and they are great and they do bring a lot of positivity to our lives. And the apps that we use are fantastic and very helpful and they make our lives easier, which is why we like them, which is why they've sold so well. But, alongside that with the internet comes the dark side of the internet. And I think people are only just starting to realise now that is a world. It's the same as the outside world, but it's online. But all the dangers that exist outside in the streets also exist on the internet, which is why it needs to be policed. There shouldn't be anybody hasn't got a name. This anonymity that goes on the internet, it's wrong. It shouldn't happen. So, you know, with good comes bad, but I think that you're right. It has to be harnessed, and there has to be a level of looking at, you know, what's good for us and what makes us happy, and you know, looking to the future. Health is definitely a big issue there.
And there is a line which suggests that perhaps if we look at the writings of William Gibson and Neuromancer and all the other sort of SF predictors, that cyberspace, yes, it's always been scary, but you know, as we say, life can be scary. You just have to be positive when you go out there.
Well, yeah, you have to take from it what's good for you and what works for you. But I do think, you know, there are areas to be careful with at the moment if we're going to talk about sort of technology and the way things are going. I find the personal profiling of information and data going on a little bit suspect. I don't really want to walk past an advertisement that knows my name.
Especially tailor-made
exactly,
for your good self.
Exactly.
Susie, today you must buy, etc. It's not going to work.
I don't want to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. You know, the fact of the matter is when you're doing your coverage for Formula One, you know, you need more. You need to engage with that human aspect side of things. It's important. OK, a reminder, you can obviously go to philips.com to actually find out more details about this particular aspect. From your own point of view, Susie, what would your ideal solution be? Because, I mean, there is obviously, if we take that line about a dark side to every one of these opportunities, if we did have a pill that will cure all illness, then surely the population of the planet would be insane. You'd have to sort of balance the thing out.
That's a good way of thinking, but then that's a whole other subject, isn't it?
We're not going to go into eugenics, not this time of day. It's not going to work in any way, shape or form from that point of view. But what would your ideal line be if you sort of had that magical ability? And of course, there is a theory, Susie, that you are indeed a time traveller who's come from the 23rd century just to civilise us in the 21st.
Not doing a very good job if that's the case. I always jokingly would set a time machine because it would be nice to go back in time and go back to different decades and see what was going on. So that's always a fun one to think about. But on a serious note, then, you know, I'm kind of with this survey, really. I think, you know, if we could cure cancer with a pill, that would be amazing.
I'm sure we will. We will in the important side of things. Susie, it's been fabulous just touching base with your good self today and having a fairly wide-ranging discussion.
Indeed.
There. Of course, even if we go into time travel, you've got the paradox of non-interference directive. You can't actually sort of, you know, affect the future. If you step on a dandelion, will it actually create impacts in the future? So, Susie, just briefly to wrap up this whole sequence, the web address with respect to Philips, of course, is...
philips.com/innovationandyou.
But two final questions. Have you, in this time period at least, Susie Perry, had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive today?
I most certainly have. I like your geekiness. I think we should meet up for a cup of herbal tea.
Yeah, white tea, I think, to be precise.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows what gadgets could manifest itself. Ian Lennox, journalist, ex-correspondent and Tyneside soul. Did you resonate with what Susie Perry was talking about there? Did you sort of think, yeah, well, that's what I'd like, pill to cure everything?
Well, I would take it. But I like most things, solutions bring other problems. And
exactly.
I think...
two faces of January. You know.
We're already on the sort of cusp of that sort of problem with longevity now. Oh, I think right. People living longer.
It's not
creating
good
problems
enough.
Of them.
Yeah, really.
And basically, if the world gets overpopulated by too much, there'll be wars to solve it, I
pretty
think.
Well there. And what is that good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
I don't
actually,
mean,
I heard
I mean,
the other day that... Oh, sorry.
Go on.
I was going to say, I heard the other day that apparently when the population reaches 11 billion, that it'll just cap and it'll naturally sort itself out, which is quite
so
a scary thought.
4 billion to go, which I think is probably back end of the 21st
well, next
century.
Next week, isn't it?
I don't know what they're breeding like in Newcastle, Ian, but I can tell you, you know, it's other
parts
of the world.
I don't either. My age.
But talking about offspring, yesterday we featured Bethany Colligan, a 20-year-old who's off to music college, and I think it was first say we kind of gave thumbs up, did we not?
This
was to a thing she'd taken from the musical Fame. Rather than actually provide you with a reprise of an Argentinian country piece of music that Cameron had brought to us, it's great stuff, but I figure, you know, maybe, given that, Ian, of course, you've recommended another daughter to join us, Immy, in the not-too-distant future.
We'll That's right, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I thought, would you like to actually have a listen to Bethany Colligan singing Totally Devoted to You?
Yes.
From Mansfield, where it's raining. Bethany Colligan, Totally Devoted to You. So what did you make of that one, Ian Lennox?
It's a bit like a song. Well, I know the song is a very old song, but it's the sound of it was almost from days gone by.
Yeah, yeah, well, it was 1978, of course. Exactly. Very.
Enough, when I heard the instrumental intro to the song, I thought she was going to start singing Hotel California for some reason.
Yeah. Well,
there's a similar sound to the tune, but the instruments we're using seem to be reminiscent of that. But got it, 1978, yes.
Exactly. But Rachel Warren, the second least favourite song in Greece, as far as you're concerned, really. You
know, yeah, I think so. Second from the
second least favourite.
Yeah, the worst one is Beauty School Dropout.
Well, please.
What is the least favourite in Greece?
Beauty School Dropout. Yes, yeah, which is clearly not Rachel Warren. But anyway, what did you make of Bethany's interpretation of Hopelessly Devoted to You, the Olivia Newton-John classic?
I think she did very well. Considering I don't like the song, I thought it was good. Yes.
You see, that's the kind of thing Louis Walsh would be proud to actually sort of have, you know. Maybe Cheryl, perhaps, as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Exactly. And Holly?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. She has a really nice voice.
Well, there we are. Short but sweet. Okay, coming up in the second hour of the programme, William Sitwell will hopefully be with us. Annabel Shackleton will be providing us with more news about Open Farm Sunday. And we'll be speaking to Emily Penn. Now, Emily is an oceans advocate, skipper and artist, graduate of Cambridge University and director of global organisation Pangaea Explorations. So she's be talking about how her experience on the Line Islands of Kiribati has given her some insights into how wider society can tackle global issues such as waste, energy, food, water, all sorts of marvellous stuff on that basis. But we have to ask those last two questions to Ian Lennox now. So, Rachel, off you go.
Oh, blimey. Well, have you enjoyed talking to us today, Ian?
It was short but sweet.
Short but sweet. Oh, and can we look forward to talking to you again soon?
Indeed, yes.
Brilliant. Ian Lennox, he will return after the news. As I say, we go sailing.
I came, I saw, tore down. I'm Gary.
I'm Matt.
I'm Rippy.
And we are the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And you're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM.
Marvellous. Okay, highs today, 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It's going to change as far as the weather is concerned, as you'd expect. The early persistent rain will tend to ease to give a day of bright or sunny intervals with occasional scattered showers, possibly heavy. The kind of weather you might possibly expect if you were actually going to take a voyage across the Pacific Ocean, or maybe a little bit more harsh than that. Inspiration is one of those words that kind of echoes in all sorts of ways, and that is writ large when we talk about Cambridge University graduate in, indeed, I believe, architecture, or was it archaeology? We'll find out as we speak to Emily Penn, the true genius behind Pangaea Explorations. Emily, good morning. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning.
So, was it architecture or archaeology, the original degree?
It was architecture.
It was architecture, exactly. I thought I'd seen the YouTube clip where we sort of went off to architecture and so on. So we've got to say this line. How do you move from architecture to say, right, I'm just going to sail down across to the Pacific and actually spend some time in the Line Islands of Kiribati?
Well, it was really a desire to try to travel without taking an aeroplane. At first, in order to minimise my carbon footprint, but it became more than that because I found as I travelled without a plane, I had the opportunity to experience those incredible transitions that you do when you're travelling across land or across an ocean, changes in climate and culture and landscape and people that you meet along the way. And after a journey that I did to Shanghai when I was studying architecture, I decided I never wanted to get on an aeroplane again. So when I set off on my first architecture job in Australia, I tried to do the same thing, get from England to Australia without taking an aeroplane. And that's what opened my eyes to everything that was going on, especially across the Pacific Ocean, that I then just kind of couldn't turn around from.
And that is why your Twitter feed describes you as oceans advocate, skipper, adventure scientist, speaker, and artistic director extraordinaire. It's fantastic. I've added the extraordinaire because I think we can go for that.
I mean, just phenomenal. I mean, we've had co-presenters on the Madrid Drive before who've headed off to a whole range of areas from that perspective. But it's that sort of sense of adventure which is there. And also, as indeed your talk demonstrates, the interesting sort of observations from a cultural point of view in terms of what you're seeing there. I mean, obviously, things like waste, energy, food and water. The way Emily actually describes the kind of outdoor loo is phenomenal. You know, it's very good. And she even talks about backsplash. It's amazing. It's a whole new world. But, I mean, Holly, thoughts and questions for yourself? She'd gone completely quiet.
I was trying to formulate a coherent sentence. Mm.
It's early in the morning, question. Emily, you see. It's
for a student, I'm sorry. I'm just reading your press release for...
I mean,
want to tell us a bit more about that.
Just share with us, Emily, the whole sort of experience that obviously you're sharing with the Diocese of Leeds, a whole variety of other things. When you first arrived at Kiribati, what did you make of the whole experience? I mean, was it a case of Bristol's nothing like this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really, when I stopped at these little islands, having grown up in the UK, I kind of imagined these little Pacific islands to be these specks of paradise, white sandy beaches, palm trees. I couldn't believe that when I stopped at these islands, I was finding plastic all over these beaches instead of sand. And then going and talking to locals and finding that they could no longer actually catch fish in their local lagoon because all the fish had been caught by big commercial fishing vessels just, you know, off the coastline. And then also to find that actually because the sea level is now rising very slowly, you know, it's not washing over their islands, but actually their soil is now so full of salt that they're struggling to grow the crops that they used to be able to grow in the non-salty soil.
We're actually looking, Emily, at some of the plastic, which of course you bring out on your talk, etc., and it's quite phenomenal. As you say, you make this connection between this stuff which lasts so long and which is so disposable in terms of plastic bags, etc., which is clearly having an impact in terms of the pollution on what otherwise would be pristine, virgin, clean sands.
Absolutely. And because of the pressure on their fishing and their food, it means that they're now being forced to actually import lots of packaged food and drink as well. So not only have they got this plastic washing up on their islands from faraway lands, but they're also producing a lot of their own waste now because of their dependence on packaged food. And they don't have any systems to deal with it. You know, they don't have a landfill. They can't make a landfill because these islands are so flat. So it's creating a huge, huge waste problem, which is a big part of what I'm out there trying to tackle.
Now, obviously, the series of talks that you're presenting, and one of which comes up on the 27th of May, next Tuesday at the Darlington Civic Theatre, is in association with the Royal Geographical Society, with, of course, IBG. Now, from your own perspective, and it's a quintessential tour de force of a delivery in terms of presentation skills and so on, as I've said, is this a way of actually raising awareness? Is that the key thing? Or would you like people to become more actively involved and say, actually, we need to do something about this? We need to literally tackle this global issue of pollution.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of both. Part of it's sort of sharing a fun, exciting, inspiring story, you know, that for people back in the UK, certainly it's the kind of thing I would have loved to have heard about perhaps when I was a student or when I was living back here. So part of it is that storytelling aspect. But yeah, I mean, really, it's hoping to kind of get people really thinking of out on these little islands. What I find fascinating is that when you look at all of these challenges, that, like you mentioned, the food, the water, the energy, the waste, on a small island scale, you suddenly see the problems a lot clearer, and you can also see the solutions. And it's interesting to kind of take some of that then back to the UK and think, hang on a minute, we've got the same challenges going on here, you know, in our back garden. And how can we apply some of that learning from the Pacific back here in the UK?
Rachel.
Hi. Hello, Emily. I think this is brilliant. I love the idea of how you travelled like by boat and avoided planes and that, like what you were talking about, like overfishing. And I mean, I recently watched a program. I think it was like Hughes Fish Fight. I think I watched it on 4AD. And I was unaware of the amount of big companies that are not like they're not very like ethical. And I was like, that's dreadful. So you have to research more about where I'm buying things. But yeah, I think it's brilliant. And like with your talks, what do you like, are they interactive or are you just like, what do you
do? So I'm mostly kind of, you know, presenting the story, obviously, because it's quite a big hall. Some of the school stuff I do is much more kind of workshop style, but this is more of a presentation, although I find that in the interval and at the end there are a lot of questions, and we do have quite a lot of question time sort of set aside at the end as well, which is usually very well used. So I really welcome that discussion.
It certainly has so become part of the intrinsic nature of raising that issue. And again, in terms of the solutions, it is challenging because you've got, on the one hand, big business. You've got a range of other factors in terms of ethical questions from that. And something else in terms of the way in which the islanders and the citizens of the islands actually were working through. They would trade supplies for coconuts, the variety of other factors there. What sort of issues did that raise? I mean, we talk about the transition to a money-based society, and some people will say that's where it's all gone wrong. We should have bring bartering back. You know, we should actually sort of, you know, deal with that to actually address our own Western problems.
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest challenges in this whole project is the fact that these islands are almost now being forced to trade with the Western world because they can no longer survive on their own islands with the resources they have because of all of that depletion. So it's a big kind of dilemma there in terms of how to do that in a sustainable way that, as you say, doesn't bring in those not-so-good values that come along when you do bring in a money-based society. So at the moment, coconuts and seaweed are their two main resources that they're able to actually export to the outside world. So it is a case of working out the best way for them to do that without getting exploited.
And unfortunately, back onto the Western world thing, in this country at least, they don't have anything for small business owners, at the very least. They don't have anything to try and encourage them to recycle their waste. You're supposed to take it on your own back, which I'm not saying that people shouldn't, but I'm saying for larger companies, there isn't any incentive to try and help them recycle. And from a financial reason, I think, or from a financial position, I think that needs to be tackled as well. If we're trying to encourage people to be more environmentally friendly and to recycle more and to make the most of what we've produced plastic-wise or anything else, other materials, then perhaps we need to also talk to the government and people like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there's a great role that the government and big corporations can play in essentially redesigning the way we package our things. And a lot of this plastic, like you say, recycling's hard. The reason recycling's sort of fairly hard to do is because it doesn't really stack up financially at the moment. It's so hard to clean and sort all of that plastic. And so without the kind of the proper incentives or the best design alternatives, then it's going to continue to be like that. So yeah, there's lots of great ways that people of all sorts of skills can be part of the solution.
We mentioned, obviously, coming to the Darlington Civic on the 27th of May. Stamford is the day after, quite literally. It's Stamford, Lincolnshire, I presume, Emily.
It is, yeah.
That's quite important to get those things sorted through. So Stamford on the 28th of May. And that is a bit of a gap because it's 22nd of June when you're in at Keswick, the Theatre by the Lake, and then 21st of October at King's Lynn. But exciting news here from the Facebook page and indeed emilypenn.co.uk. Are you still looking for some part-time help with general administration and project development on this?
I've actually been rather swamped with applicants.
I thought you might have been.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I must admit, and they're all looking amazing, so I've got the daunting task today of going through them all.
Essential skills and attributes, well-organised, great communicator, positive attitude, attention to detail, excellent computer skills, web, email, and so on and so forth. You can't do it all, Emily. You need to have some sort of assistant to actually work through the whole process.
I know, and I'm heading off to the Arctic for 3 months this summer.
Yeah.
So I am needing a little bit of help on land while I'm off on the next trip.
So, I mean, we spoke to Richard Harpham, as we mentioned, at the London Boat Show a couple of years ago now, and obviously followed him with his inspired treks around the country and various other factors. Emily, when you say you're heading to the Arctic, presumably as a non-flyer, you'll be sailing there.
I will. I'm going to be attempting to sail through the Northwest Passage.
Yeah.
So that's the route. Nice. That's the west coast of Greenland.
Yeah, excellent.
And then up over the top of Canada. So fingers crossed we'll make it through, but it does depend a lot on the weather.
Well, I mean, in a sense, it is the Arctic. So hopefully, you know, if we've got huge tropical conditions, we've got a massive problem on the planet, you know, huge, even bigger than we thought. But in terms of that, obviously, I would say wrap up warm, Emily, and winter thermals. That would be my recommendation. But
absolutely.
From that point of view. Rachel, anything else you'd like to add to our great, I just think it's fantastic. And presumably Pangaea explorations, it's after the notion of Gaia as the whole planet. And the sort of line from that perspective, is that where the title came from?
It's actually, Pangaea was the name of the supercontinent before it all separated out.
You see, it's interesting you mention it, because obviously, being too polite and being from Bristol, she didn't correct me on my pronunciation lapse there. So it is actually Pangaea as opposed to Pangaea. Yeah, okay, so, going back to that, we were all one at one stage, and then it all, tectonic plates, etc., separated. Same thing. Rachel, any questions?
Well, I think everything that you've said sounds very exciting and brilliant and inspired. Well done. With regards to your trip to the Arctic, so how many are you going with a group of people or how are you?
Yes, there's going to be 8 of us on board, a 45-foot boat, and we're going to be going through that stretch of water that is opened up every year when the ice melts. And we're going to be looking for microplastics is one of the main pieces of research we'll be doing. So basically to see whether all of this plastic that we have down in the subtropics
has actually made its way
up there. And then we'll also be deploying drifter buoys to collect meteorological data and a whole kind of mix of different science and education projects.
That's incredible. That's really exciting.
So any plans to go back to building houses or designing buildings, Emily? Or is it a case of, no, I think I've found my calling in life here?
I mean, I still love architecture, but I feel I actually use the same skills that I learned as an architect, which really is all about problem solving, you know, producing a creative solution to a problem. I'm still doing that now every day, whether it's helping these small islands tackle their challenges or even, you know, running an organization like Pangaea and figuring out all of these different trips and how everything pieces together and how we can tackle these big problems.
A few of our contributors and reporters, indeed, our acting station manager Ed Wellman, are off to St. Christopher's School this morning. Christopher and Harvey Calcutt and Anthony Kafferke are actually joining Ed Wellman there. I'm just sort of drawing there, Emily, because does it start with the youth? I mean, you've talked about schools-based projects that you've actually involved with. Do you get a sense that there is a kind of ecological consciousness that actually will address this plastic issue that sort of permeates and is beginning to permeate, you know, the world to its betterment?
Yeah, I think kids play a huge part in this problem, and obviously, you know, they are making the decisions of the future. So really, yeah, really, really important. But at the same time, I feel that actually every single one of us has a part to play. And it is a case of us all contributing our skills to kind of build up those solutions. And also a lot of it is about a shift in mindset, you know, a different way of thinking, a different way of living, you know, thinking about how resilient we are as a species on our planet. And, you know, that comes from every one of us, regardless of our age. But, of course, it is the young ones who are going to take that forward.
And we are stewards of the whole thing. So, Emily, in the event of the inevitable Hollywood come knocking on your door saying we want to actually make the tale of Emily Penn, the director of Pangaea Explorations and so on, who would you like to have play you on in the silver screen?
Oh my gosh, that's a really hard question for a girl who doesn't watch hardly any TV.
That'd be nice, you see, exactly. That's classic Ryan. Good response. Well, we'll keep it to some nice, easy questions to wrap up with. Again, a reminder that the Royal Geographic Society UK speaking tour featuring Emily Penn, it's out there now. You can go to Emily's very own website, emilypenn.co.uk, obviously Facebook, Twitter, online from that point of view. Emily, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on your Midweek Drive Morning Edition debut?
It has been super. Thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing everybody next Tuesday.
The next critical... Tragically, Emily, I'll be down in Lincoln whilst you're up in Darlington. But there we are.
No.
I know. It's what happens. Life. But can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again and keeping us appraised and updated with your adventures? And I'm sure we can get satellite signal, phones, etc. to even as you go through the Arctic. Will you stay
Absolutely.
With us and keep us appraised of what's happening?
Absolutely, I'd love to. Yeah, we can talk from nearly at the North Pole.
A round of applause for Emily Penn, please. Yay! A true legend and superstar and architect.